Welcome to Polycast, the civilization podcast focused on game strategy. Dan Q.
Makalua.
The Vian Team.
Ed Jin.
With guest co-host
Hammer Rabbi.
And don't forget to butcher the username of the person you're reading, because that's the tradition of the show, so...
Only for some of us, Dan.
Well, I see. Yeah, these are... Hi, and welcome to Polycast episode number 205. This is Hammer Rabbi from the Civ Fanatics Forums. I co-host a Civ 5 Game of the Month. We're going to be joined with Mad Jin. Daniel Quick, the Mian team is here, as well as Makalua.
Hi, everybody.
Hey, Common Sense just called. You left it in a cloud of dust at the side of the road several stupid decisions ago.
You and me together, let's get all the things.
Why does that sound like Dan's bringing in personal problems?
I still need more caffeine.
What is the source of your username? We've had so many guests on the show, I don't normally ask, but I are curious, as is the rest of the interwebs that dares listen to the show. What is with Hammer Rabbi?
It's a combination of two things. One, it's portmanteau of Hammurabi. And because the game involves hammers, I put Hammer Rabbi. I'm not an actual rabbi or anything.
Mm-hmm. That was obvious, Dan.
Yeah, that's pretty much what I thought, actually.
No.
Oh, and I thought it had something to do with, like, a Weird Al Yankovic parody.
He even had a picture of Hammurabi on his avatar for a long time. I don't know if that's still true.
Yeah, I had that picture up for a little while, yeah.
Civilization Revolution 2 announced and released.
Reasonably big news.
Civilization Revolution 2 was announced and released in a week's time.
Yep.
It's like, whoa, hey, guess what? It is 25th of June, and hey, on the 2nd of July, we're going to release Civilization Revolution 2. Oh, by the way, it's a premium title for mobile only.
Yeah, they probably made it the week before. It's probably just a joke. Hey, let's just slap Civ Rev 2. We'll put a 2 on the end and call it a game. Okay, go.
Hey guys, my name is Jess. I'm from 2K, and I'm here with Adam Plotkin, our associate producer.
Happy to be bringing people Civilization Revolution 2. Get it while it's hot.
Now, I will say that when the original Civilization Revolution came out 6 years ago, in 2008, I had never owned a console platform. And then I got myself a Nintendo DS and played Civ Rev on the DS. Now, it's not what to say now, because I do actually own a mobile phone, but I do not own an Apple. I enjoyed Civilization Revolution on the DS because it gave me Civ on the go. So you might be thinking, does that mean, Dan, you're going to get yourself an Apple device that runs iOS or maybe even Android when it comes out on Android later on? The answer is probably not. That's got less to do with the device itself and more to do with the game, because from what I have seen and read, the original Civ Rev, that's still good enough for me.
I know there's people out there who have played Civ Rev 1. You'll notice that there's a completely new user interface that we've added with updated graphics. We also have some new units, some new wonders, a lot of new content for you to enjoy.
We really wanted to make this version mobile-focused.
Personally, I love Civ Rev, so I'm really excited about this game. I mean, even as a traditional Civ player, this is the perfect quick fix for me when I'm on the go or, you know, hanging out on the couch. So I'm really excited about this.
Yeah, something we really wanted to focus on with this version of Civ Rev is not only to make it accessible to people, you know, make it easy to pick up and play for the casual Civ fan or someone getting back into Civ that hasn't played in quite some time, but also it's the perfect quick fix for, you know, hardcore Civ fans. You can play a game in a couple hours, really, you know, enjoy it throughout the day and finish. It's still just as addictive as all the other Civs. I always find myself going, oh, just one more turn. I could probably beat this game right now. And then an hour later, I'm still playing.
But there was a lot of things that people started picking apart with regards to this title. It certainly is a big year, though, for Civ. I mean, my gosh, we've got Civilization Beyond Earth coming out later this year. We've already had an open beta for Civilization Online. And now we've got Civilization Revolution 2. That's three different Civ titles from three different developers. Yes, I'm going to jump to that right away.
Okay.
This is not a Firaxis title.
Yep.
It is a 2K China title. They developed it, and then 2K Games published it.
2K China was the lead developer on this title, but obviously we can't make a Civ title without Firaxis. Their design insight, their kind of strength in making high-quality games, you know, obviously Sid Meier being involved in putting his stamp of approval on it obviously speaks loudly to the quality of the game. So 2K China really did a good job to make sure to keep the spirit of the title and the quality level up.
I'm certain there will be people in the community that will question that, just like they questioned comparable statements from people about the now-defunct Civilization World.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, the launch trailer has the Firaxis logo in it.
And same with pretty much all the images.
Yes.
Have Firaxis logo on it. So it's easy to get confused when 2K doesn't actually put the correct logo on it.
On everything portable, they showed someone playing Civ Rev 2 on their iPad, and it does show in order 2K China, 2K, and Firaxis Games logos side by side by side when it loads up. But still, yes, the confusion is absolutely understandable.
Civ Rev had been kicking around for quite some time, so giving it a refresh and you know, really adding to it and accentuating and highlighting some of its key fundamentals was kind of important and seemed to make a lot of sense, especially as, you know, some other Civ titles are preparing to get out there. Kind of made sense to get this out to fans so they can keep kind of Civ fresh in their mind, but also hopefully bring some new fans back in and really get people excited.
In terms of the similarities and differences, there is a lot that's the same. For example, all the civilizations you had in Civilization Revolution, you get in Civ Rev 2. Except there are also two additional leaders, one for America and one for England. And you can enjoy your side politicast discussion why only America and England get additional leaders.
Ooh.
This was made by a Chinese development team?
Yep.
That's interesting.
You still have Abraham Lincoln as leader of America, but you can unlock JFK.
What? That's what they gave for the second leader. Are you kidding me?
The second leader now? It's getting us to talk about it, right? And you still have Elizabeth as England, but you can also unlock Churchill.
Well, that's less surprising, yeah.
It's pretty obvious.
To unlock JFK, you'll have to win a specific achievement with Lincoln. To unlock Churchill, you'll have to unlock a specific achievement with Elizabeth.
And do these leaders have new play styles or benefits that they offer by using them?
Yes, that's correct. So each leader has its own set of leader bonuses, and although they're very similar to the American and English leader bonuses, they are definitely different and varied, so it gives you a different flavor to play even as the same nation.
It's not clear from the previews that I was able to gather what the specific achievement you have to get in order to unlock JFK, and then with Churchill, implied anyway, I haven't seen it confirmed one way or another, but you need to get yourself an economic victory, which is, of course, one of the standard victory conditions, which was also found in the original Civ Rev. It's been referred to as the currency victory. Cultural was said correctly. Science victory was referred to as technology, and the domination victory has been referred to as combat by a 2K representative.
Personally, I like to play very passively, and I go for the cultural victory that's not very popular, or, you know, tech maybe. But, you know, the moment anybody messes with my people, it's like, it's on.
It's on, yeah.
It's on. I will take everything you own.
Yeah, I normally go knocking on the door and then realize I bit off more than I can chew.
That's all the same. In terms of other similarities and differences, unprotected cities can still be captured. There are still artifacts on the map that will give you technologies, give you a gold gain, an increase in strength in units. You still have barbarians on the map, the different types, the friendly and not so friendly. A big difference, air quote big difference, at least certainly 2K has tried to push this and lead up to the release, is that there's an expanded later game technology tree, which includes lasers. Pew pew!
All right, lasers.
People complained previously that you'll see this big tech tree goes along for a while, but then it really starts to narrow down as you get to future techs. However, we decided to make it a little bit more robust in Civ Rev 2. We added information technology that will help us build Silicon Valley, added modern medicine that will give us the Red Cross wonder, And then for some of the units and buildings, we have lasers. That will give you jet fighters, stealth bombers, and laser defense. And then modern warfare will give you special forces, aircraft carriers, and nuclear power plants.
So basically, they took the old game, polished it slightly, and then called it Civ Rev 2.
Given that you've said that, one of the previews I saw on the iPad guide by Marshall Walker says, there have been a few complaints that the game is more of a rehash than a sequel, quote-unquote. And it certainly seems like a big point of this is, hey, instead of the mobile port that we did of the original Civ Rev in 2009, you can now actually get a title that was designed for the mobile platform, specifically right now Apple OS's and Android to come a little later.
This is live on the App Store for $14.99. It's a premium game, so there's no in-app purchases right now. All content is included. It's available for iOS devices, including your iPhone, iPad, iPad Mini, and iPod Touch.
As you see us playing here today, we're playing on an iPad Air. It looks pretty sweet. Top-end device, really kind of accentuates the graphics, the ease of control with it being on a mobile device. It's very responsive. Kind of enjoy playing it on this touch screen. Big fan of mouse and keyboard, but kind of the responsiveness and quick ease of control is quite pleasant.
Someday, I'll just wait for a sale, thanks, because comparable titles are like $5 to $10. What's this, $15? Other people are saying, well, you know, if you get a new game for a PC or a console, it's going to be like $40 or $50, $60, so it's ill. Take from that what you will. It has already been said, and this ties into another Civ title we're going to be talking about, Shirley, DLC.
We'll also be adding a store later on where we can offer DLC, some new packs, some new leaders, which will be happening down the line.
So perhaps to suggest that more than just two of these 16 civilizations will in fact have a second leader. Also, by the way, already the release of DLC, specifically an American Civil War scenario that was released on, get this, the 4th of July.
Ba-dum-bum. There's going to be real live events that tie into things that are happening in the real world.
Oh,
so you can play miniature events that are updated on a regular basis.
I don't know how you exactly update an American Civil War scenario, seeing as how, you know, it finished some time ago, but okay, I...
And definitely was not directly tied to the 4th of July, but, you know.
Yeah, well...
Details.
So the details of this is you're paying a stupid amount of money for something that you probably already have if you have Civ Rev 1 for mobile. And then you get to get nickeled and dimed to actually add features to it. That, yeah, in-game, don't buy it.
Just to conclude what's also similar, there's still the 5 difficulty levels, Chieftain, Warlord, King, Emperor, Deity. There's also a scenario generator, kind of the what I call the advanced starts equivalent on PC version. Other than myself and Madjin, has anyone else on the panel played Civ Rev for any of its iterations, whether it was the Xbox 360, PlayStation 3, DS?
No. No.
Okay.
Yeah, I played a demo once and I realized I was not interested. I didn't really play it.
Fair enough. There were some things that were said on the live stream. Just makes you think, I don't really know if you know enough about the original Civ Rev to be making that statement. Imagine I can relate to this more. Imagine you talked about that this is really just a rehash. As a lot of other people have said, why would I pay this premium, whether or not I have the original Civ Rev or not? What's really the point of this? People who don't already have it on mobile, hey, get it for mobile, because we've gone back to the beginning and we've now made it easier for you to use. Well, there were some unnecessary slights against the original Civ Rev to try to bolster Civ Rev 2. So it wasn't so much about Civ Rev 2 itself, but again, the comparison that I thought was a bit harsh. Adam Plonkin, again the associate producer from 2K China, in the live stream, said that city management menu was a bit difficult to work your way through. I thought, okay. Great new addition, quote-unquote, he said. Active unit and an end turn button. Because it was quite difficult to advance through your turns in Civ Rev.
Who in the what now? Have you never played the game?
I specifically remember one of the things that I liked about Civ Rev, particularly in the early game, when you didn't have a lot to do, and this applied earlier to PC titles, was, boy, wouldn't it be nice if the game, you could set up to just automatically end the turn so you don't have to click end turn button and turn button and turn button until there's actually something for you to do? He also said in Civ Rev you had to, quote, drag units. Took a little bit of extra time to manage exactly where you wanted to go. Now you can tap on the screen to pick a spot, tap again to move there quick and easy. There was a way to tell your units to take move multiple spaces over multiple turns. I really don't think that took a lot of extra time.
Mm-hmm.
It's so sad in this version, you can see the people fall down.
Yeah, Civ Rev 1, a little bit underwhelming in the action department when it comes to really showing the battle. So something that we heard loud and clear is that people want to see on-map action. So we obviously have, as you saw, the combat presentation going on there.
But the most what-the-heck response came as a result of the revelation that
there will not be multiplayer in this game.
Wow.
Well, there went all the value out of that.
And this is where the 2K representative from marketing probably said the most. He works for corporate. I mean, we've never heard of her before. Jessica Lewenstein, who is the online and mobile PR manager at 2K Games.
She's the online manager? Getting told that there's no multiplayer?
I know.
Well, it's not very online, is it?
It gets better. I would like to think that her explanation of multiplayer was not scripted, or at least not planned, that it was kind of an off-the-cuff statement, kind of like what Adam said about gameplay. And in Kotaku preview published on the 30th of June, she was asked, so like in the Civ Rev, there's multiplayer. Nope, there's no multiplayer. And then this was the reason she gave.
We found that it just was not a popular feature.
I'm sorry, has she asked the Civ Rev community about this? Because I'm pretty sure it was, actually.
Well, no, that was for console. Keep in mind.
Oh, I'm so sorry. It's such a difference. What, you don't think people would sit there with their mobile phones and try to play each other in it in the airport or something like that, the way people used to do with, like, Pokemon and things?
Well, no, I would fully expect that you should be able to play multiplayer on the handheld, I wouldn't doubt, but the vast majority of Civ Rev multiplayer was done on the consoles, and that's the only thing that created a community, both on the 2K forums and on the Civ Fanatics forums. Those were entirely 360 PS3 related groups. But yeah, it makes no sense not to do multiplayer with a mobile device.
And even more ridiculous to me was the reason for not including multiplayer, which was the comparison to the original Civ Rev, where it was quote-unquote not a popular feature. How many times do we get people who play Civ single player and say, I don't want to do multiplayer, and a common reason is this takes too dang freaking long.
And your AI sucks.
Yes, yes. The AI issues definitely with the original Civ Rev. Which, by the way, never once did they say, we have improved AI in Civ Rev 2. Even if it wasn't true, I can't believe they didn't say it, because that would have been something to say. But Jess didn't stop there by saying it wasn't a popular feature. Oh, no. We've already cut. That's the cut, and now let's add a little salt into the wound.
Okay. And rather than invest resources in that, we focused on actual gaming and improving it.
Really?
So, guess what? Multiplayer is not actual gaming. That's not like, Jess. I can't believe she said that.
Well, no, I can't believe she said that because I haven't seen a single thing that they've talked about that is actually an improvement to the original game.
Next time we'll add two players to the mode and play at the same time.
That would be awesome. Local multiplayer.
Everything that they have said that I've come across that they say is an improvement, it's either actually not true, or at best it's six half dozen of the other. In other words, it's just, well, what you're physically describing, like moving units, it's okay, it's just different control input because it's on a phone as opposed to a console or a handheld device. It's not better or worse necessarily, it's just different.
Mm-hmm.
Sigh. Another contradiction that came up, by the way, is in the official launch trailer description on the Sid Meier's Civilization YouTube channel, also on the official Facebook page, will not run on earlier devices.
Well,
so we hope you bought your phone this year, otherwise you're bound.
I don't have an issue with that in and of itself. I wouldn't have even made mention of this necessarily, or certainly not this build-up, if Adam Plonkin had not said in the launch video, oh, it does play on earlier devices. So, can you guys
communicate? I've heard that's great.
Can the left hand know what the right hand's doing at all times? Adam says you can run Civ Rev 2 on devices as old as, and he mentions specific models. Oh, it gets better. I love it. The iPad 2, the iPhone 4S, and iPod 5.
Well, I guess it just depends on which ones handle the iOS, really. Because if you can't get the iOS onto your older device, then, yeah, it won't run it. But, yeah.
And then, perhaps, you might be thinking, is that the end of the Civ Rev controversy?
Let me guess. It gets better again?
It gets better again. You know how in the past there would be conversations about PC-based Civ, quote-unquote mainstream Civ, and it's like, hey, what about the Mac? And what about Linux? And we happen to know that for Civilization Beyond Earth, which we'll be talking about very shortly, it's coming out on the Mac and Linux right from the outset.
Mm-hmm.
It's already been said. So when it is announced that Civilization Revolution 2 is coming out on iOS devices, immediately a lot of Android users went, are you kidding me? Android dominates the market in terms of units sold. However...
Hi, we know jack and crap about our market. Go us.
A, there is some insight that we can glean as to terms of why it's on iOS first. They do say it is coming for Android devices. I still think it would have been a better marketing ploy to, if not release at the same time, be a bit more definitive about when it's coming, like coming soon. You could even say like last quarter of the year or something like that. But it is known that iOS does well in the United States in terms of world market share, not so much, but in the U.S., proportionately, it's a little better. And, of course, where are 2K Games and Firaxis? I know it's not Firaxis' title. But, however, when you look at when people purchase their phone, in terms of use as well as monetization, in other words, once someone buys an Apple device or an Android device, how much they're willing to pay for content, Apple customers in studies time and again show anywhere from like 4 to 5 times the amount that they're willing to spend. And we already know that 2K has said, we're going to be adding a store later on, offer DLC, and they can see that, in addition to it being more popular in the United States, at least proportionally, than the rest of the world, that people use their, for apps, and of course this is an app, Civ Rev 2, more than Android users. In addition to going where the market is, and this gets back to why is it not on console, Civ Rev on the console, at least from 2K's perspective, it really didn't sell that well. If you look at the Xbox 360 version, in the first month, it was on the top 10 sales chart, and then it dropped off entirely. Whereas the iOS version, so this port, it was the 9th best-selling game for the iPhone in 2009, the year it came out. And it's also frequently reappeared on the iTunes top paid app list, even years after its release. So you combine all of that together, they're going where the market is, which is mobile versus console, and they're focusing on the people that are going to use their device more and spend more, which is the Apple iOS. And last time I checked, 2K is a company. They're trying to make money.
You sure?
I'm pretty sure they're trying to make money. And so if you've listened to all of this and then say, well, there must be a difference, Dan, between being a good mobile game and versus a good Civ game. And that question is actually posed by GameSpot's Alex Newhouse. Civilization Revolution 2, he says, is a good mobile game, but is it a good Civ game? And I think, above all, we need to remember that Civ Rev and Civ Rev 2 are not saying that they are a successor to any mainstream Civilization title. It is not intended to be, and instead of, it's a companion to. Alex actually says, when I stopped comparing it to Civ 5 and instead enjoyed it for its merits as a good mobile strategy title, I realized that Civ Rev 2 is a great game with enough to it to keep me coming back. And of course, I wonder, I guess you never played Civ Rev then.
Mm-hmm.
I think from what I've read, you know, I'm on the outside looking in on this in terms of being a mobile user. Again, I have a cell phone, but I have no apps for it. It's just a phone. It makes calls. The end.
Old hoagie.
If you haven't played the original Civ Rev, you would like a mobile Civ experience, and you have an Apple device that can run this, the port of Civ Rev, which, again, did so well in sales and has been generally well received, is like a third of the price.
Yeah.
So that's going to be a comparable experience anyway.
And for comparable price point-wise, when XCOM went over to mobile, the whole game went over to mobile. And it was not a port of a... like, it wasn't a watering down of the main game. And that came out for about the same price as what they're trying to charge you for Civ Rev 2, which is basically just a cleaning up of a port of a not very deep game. So, yeah, price point-wise, especially compared to something that 2K already put out, not so much.
See who we got to our north. Cleopatra. I don't know. She always seems so sweet, but I always find out later she comes to attack my city. You know.
The moment you start reaching success, they turn on you.
Yeah. Well, looks like we found another civ over here. Oh, Catherine, the leader of the Russians. We'll tell her to go kick rocks for now, and we'll come over here and we'll put pressure on Egypt. We'll start expanding our nation and adding to our city count. And of course, classic Civ fashion, she thinks she's going to get the best of us.
And if your advisors tell you otherwise, ignore them.
Yeah. Tell them to buzz off.
We've got another Civilization title, other than Civilization V, to talk about. Holy crap!
Yep, that we do. Yeah. We have a release date on a certain title we've perhaps mentioned in the past on the show. Beyond Earth will be released October 24th, 2014, worldwide. Yeah.
What? Wait! Worldwide?
Worldwide.
Worldwide?
I said October.
Everywhere?
Yeah.
No, like, you know it's going to be offset. It's going to be like the 24th here and then like the 26th for Europe. And
I am reading it word for word from their Facebook announcement.
Yeah, it does say...
Yeah,
he didn't pull it out of his earth. It actually does say worldwide.
Yeah. Apparently you can't get it on the moon, though. That's not part of the world.
Worldwide.
No, no. Oh, but it's not possible to pre-order Rhea Steam yet. So, you know, enjoy.
You can get the Exoplanets map pack if you do pre-order.
Oh my gosh.
Oh wow.
Keep going with the introduction, Phil. I got points on both the Steam thing as well as the pre-order thing. Oh man.
No, go ahead. Go ahead.
All right, let's start with the Steam thing. There was a discussion on Facebook. In response to that, someone said, what's up with that? Sid Meier's Civilization responded. That's right. The whole franchise is now a person that can respond to posts.
Scary.
I know. 2K actually blames Steam for this. You should probably ask Steam that question. The question being, how come we can't pre-order for Steam yet? Because they've said this is normal for Steam, that you're not able to pre-order a title this early. And... Cohen Vanderpash on Facebook pointed out, says, what do you mean as is the norm for Steam? Other companies are doing their bonus very early sales through Steam, so as is normal for Steam is nonsense.
Mm-hmm.
And that's when Sid Meier's Civilization prompted said you should ask Steam that question. So yeah, I don't know exactly what they're getting at there with regards to that.
There's probably something going on in the negotiations, I would guess.
If they're not giving Steam a special pre-order bonus.
Yeah.
Because, I'm sorry, Galciv 3 has been pre-ordered for, like, more than a year before release.
Yeah, that's the as-is-normal thing is nonsense. But, yeah, if Steam wants something to do it and they're not giving it to them, then perhaps it is normal under those circumstances. But, yeah.
Yeah.
And or maybe as compared to other retailers, the retailers aren't willing to give 2K a large enough percentage of, like, a referral fee for copies purchased. But on the DLC, right away I'm thinking, like, really? Day Zero DLC? Like, oh my god. Whatever. Okay.
Map packs don't count.
Why not just include it in the base game? Why are we already into DLC? And for pre-ordering. I'm certain you can get it after the fact for money, but of course it's an enticement to pre-order, and if there's the whole never pre-order games thing, regardless of whether it's Civ or not. But let's just say you want to go ahead and do that. First off, as someone said on Facebook, Jamie Carney, how about, you know, telling us what the heck is in the pack?
Mm-hmm.
You can find out that information, but you have to go to news sources. It's just Exoplanets Map Pack. Find out that there are, in fact, six, and you can even get descriptions of each one of the six. Just as an example, Tau Ceti D, Planet of Seas and Archipelago featuring a biodiversity and a wealth of resources is the description. So let's say you want to go ahead and pre-order this. You click on the link, which takes you to civilization.com, and the link is provided on the official Facebook page for Civ or the Twitter feed. You then choose your region. Of course, not every country is listed there, but US, UK, and Canada is now listed, by the way. Initially, Canada was not on that list. It was added a couple of days later. You then have to choose platform, PC, huh? You then choose a retailer, which, of course, is dependent upon the region that you chose.
Mm-hmm.
You click Buy Now. It opens up the retailer page in a new tab. There is absolutely no mention on any retailer page that your pre-order includes this map pack.
Yeah.
So you don't really know whether or not you're getting it as part of the pre-order or whether you have to take additional steps after the fact, if it's just going to be delivered to you automatically, and there's been no response from 2K about that disconnect. This is right from civilization.com.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm just thinking, for trying to push this, you're not communicating with people. You can go ahead and pre-order, but it seems like it's a wing and a prayer that it's actually included in your pre-order.
Well, I'm going to point out that no matter where you buy it, you're still getting a Steam code.
Yes, you're still ultimately going to be tied to Steam,
yeah,
one way or the other. That is true.
So when we had the Phyrexians on the other day and we were talking about Beyond Earth, we couldn't get to all the questions that everybody sent in, so now we have a sample selection of some others that they also answered.
All of these questions were answered by Dennis Shirk, senior producer at Firaxis Games.
So just pretend our voices are him.
First question from Star of Hope. What have you learned from creating Civilization V and its expansions, and what do those lessons mean for Civilization Beyond Earth?
Every game in the series is an amalgamation of everything we've learned in the games before it. We couldn't have made Civ 5 without the experience of making Civ 1 through 4. The same goes for Beyond Earth. It would be a totally different game if we made it at a different point in our company's career. Civ 5 showed us the quality and power of our fans. With Civ 5 came the introduction of the Steam Workshop, and we took a couple of steps in making the mod process easier for our fans. They embraced it, we embraced it, and everything was good. We see the value in what the fans have done with these tools and what that means for the longevity of the game. We will definitely continue this trend.
Why is it I'm so unfortunate that after the everything was good portion, I just had like Martha Stewart in my head.
It's a good thing.
Crap.
So basically, they learn Steam Workshop is good. People make stuff on Steam Workshop.
We would tell you all the specific things we learned from making the other games, but those are trade secrets.
Yeah. So basically, modding will exist.
You can have mods.
Okay, then.
With our blessing.
This time.
This is Will Miller of Firaxis Games, one of the co-lead designers on Sid Meier's Civilization Beyond Earth. We've settled on a lush alien planet with deep rift canyons full of magma and miasma, which are environmental hazards, and an alien nest nearby. We'll investigate this resource pod. Resource pods were sent ahead of our colonists by the people of Earth. By investigating these, we can get resources from them.
Okay, question number two was from Tyrod. I think I said that right. Are the Civs still going to use the unique ability, unique unit, etc. format, or are they more or less different?
This is a yes and a no. When you select a sponsor at the beginning of the game, they do not have a unique unit, but they do have a unique ability, but the customization does not end there. As the player continues through the game's setup, they will choose colonists, cargo type, etc. to create a unique start to every game. In addition, unique abilities and unique units are attached to the new affinity system. Every colony will have the same basic units, workers, explorers, soldiers, etc., but eventually most of those units upgrade into an affinity-specific version. Each affinity has their own special units that are unlike any unit in any other affinity's arsenal. Some of these unique units are huge and will be the center of some awesome battles.
Interesting.
Mm-hmm.
This is Fort Miller, a military station. If we set up a trade route with them, we'll receive a powerful siege unit for our military. And here we have a new alien life form, the Siege Worm. This can destroy tile improvements just by passing through them, and they're very hard to kill with just one military unit. We'll leave this guy alone for now. There are also a number of alien artifacts on this world, like this huge alien skeleton. Let's send our explorer in to take a closer look. Once our explorer finishes his work in a few turns, we'll gain a reward ranging from scientific research to resources, or even an alien unit that's under our control.
Number three, do the leaders know each other like they did in Alpha Centauri by Renge?
The faction leaders are all prominent, influential figures on Earth, so if they didn't know each other personally, then they know of each other. In his mind, there's already been a few rounds of classic Civ diplomacy and espionage going on before these leaders leave Earth. He could see Suzanne Fielding of ARC deploying spies into damning science labs to steal or sabotage the plans for Pan-Asian cooperatives interplanetary vessel. Suppose it could be more civil than that in the future. I can see all of our leaders on a Most Influential People magazine article. If they don't know each other by the end of a game, they definitely will. Weird question, but okay. Basically, they're the leaders. They probably do know of each other at some point.
It's not that weird, because there is a significant amount of interactivity in the original, in Alpha Centauri.
Oh, yeah, well, background history.
And I think there was some, like, default like or dislike between some of the factions, if I recall correctly, as well. So.
Yeah, with all the lore and everything else.
Yeah.
And I'm certain fan fiction will elaborate that in addition to...
Oh, dear. No, no, you don't want to...
If leaders do or do not know each other, are they familiar or are they familiar with each other, if you know what we're talking about?
Why do you have to bring that in?
I don't know.
Rule 34.
That is not the realm of Polycast. I ban it.
Yeah.
The phrase fan fiction is enough. You don't want to preface anything with fan fiction. I'm sorry. At least not publicly. Lol.
As it happens, Bar-A has settled cities near a strategic resource that's critical to us, Firaxite. Firaxite is used by supremacy factions to build powerful military units and buildings, and Bar-A has declined to trade for it. We need this for ourselves. We've got a liberation force assembled here. They're reinforced by a tactical satellite. This tactical satellite is from our new settlement and was launched to assist with the attack. As long as it's in orbit, it will assist our units with healing as well as combat bonuses. If Bar-A is to survive, he should destroy this as soon as possible.
Speaking about fan fiction, question number 4 by Toby Earnscliff. Is there any chance of an Android iOS version?
Okay. At the moment, we don't have any plans, but there are always possibilities in the unknown future. We've seen success with bringing XCOM to mobile platforms. Strategy games just seem to work on tablet devices. I personally love the idea of being able to play Civ anywhere, but our focus at the moment is making sure Beyond Earth is the best it can be at launch. If the game catches on, then who knows what's next?
Dennis Shirk had an interview last year with GamerZines, and he said it makes more sense to us to look at touch-based interface and mobile devices than console controls. XCOM was announced for the iPad, and that kind of stuff is perfect. And even Civ 5 has singular face point-and-click interface when they converted that to Windows 8 Touch. Just to tie back into the whole mobile space and Civ focus.
All right. Start off with question number 5 from Laura Zale. Apart from military units, how will affinities differ from each other mechanically? What sorts of buildings, wonders, improvements, and other tech-enabled items will each affinity have?
Probably the largest difference between affinities is the different victory types they unlock. Each affinity has a unique victory type and a unique planetary wonder needed to complete it. Affinities are necessary to construct some of the more advanced buildings, such as the Grow Lab and Biofactory for Harmony. Affinities also give persistent player-wide bonuses. Progressing far enough in Supremacy, for example, will grant your faction orbital launch coverage near a Firaxite resources anywhere on the map, allowing you to place orbital units in faraway places.
You gain devotion to an affinity through many means. Objects and resource pods that earn affinity, through excavating ruins found on the planet, and even through the tech web, which is the main way you'll earn affinity.
Also from Laura Zell, question number 6. What type of growth-limiting mechanism, corruption, health, happiness, will Civilization Beyond Earth employ?
Beyond Earth will track the health of your population. Health is a nationwide concept that aggregates a number of ideas, including the prosperity, affluence, and standard of living for your citizens. That's affluence, not influence. Health comes from buildings, resources, terrain, and quest rewards, and is lost to high population and a number of other Civ-size concerns. Your cities get a boost or suffer a penalty proportional to the strength of your positive or negative health.
Can't they just call it maintenance?
Yeah, something.
Whatever. That's okay.
The 7th question is from Byte. How will Beyond Earth engage with ocean tiles? Will it be like Civ 5 and outside fishing boats and moving units, not a whole lot, or will there be a great focus?
How much you do at sea is really up to the player and the map type they choose, although for a large part of the early game, the oceans are a very dangerous place, and the mid-game, and the late-game. Until you can constantly maintain a navy, venturing around the ocean with an unprotected explorer is not recommended. That said, there are unique gameplay possibilities in the water. Each affinity has some very cool, unique naval units, and there are unique aquatic aliens to be found as well. See the first sentence? I think choosing one of our new maps with bigger stretches of ocean is a whole other Beyond Earth experience in and of itself.
Don't go into the water. Don't get on the boat.
At least they'll do it early.
It's Loch Ness. Everyone run.
Yeah, it's the siege worm equivalent, except it's underwater. Anyway, question number 8. Nikolai wants to know, what new feature is your favorite and why?
Well, not my personal favorite, but Shirk's personal favorite. My personal favorite new toys are the orbital lair and orbital units. Who doesn't love upgrades and getting perks? It's a fundamental fun video game thing. People love to get stuff that makes them stronger, and the orbital units are all about that with a little bit of a twist. If you want to maximize a satellite's benefit, there are a lot of factors to be made about where to place a satellite, which satellite is best for the situation, and when to build it. The right orbital unit can make or break a hostile situation. It's another small addition that can potentially have a big impact on your game. So it's kind of like satellites with XCOM, where they're situational and maybe give you benefits somehow.
Yeah, there's only one appropriate supplement to what you just said. Pew, pew!
Oh, yeah.
Orbital facepalm cannon?
Yeah, that would be awesome. Well, for the 9th question, this is by Bruno Prado Santos. What is the aspect of Civilization Beyond Earth's mechanics that you identify as the most defining for the game as a new and independent title? What is it that the player will do and truly feel, I'm playing a game I've never played before?
I think that Honor easily belongs to the tech web. On paper, the tech web may sound like a simple change in the way players progress in their tech. Actually, I disagree. It doesn't sound simple at all. But, okay. When you sit down and play the game, you will see the depth that a seemingly simple rearrangement of our techs can provide. For one, the tech web offers a ton of replayability. You'll have to carefully pick and choose what techs you want based on what affinity you want additional levels in, what upgrades you want for your city, and what victory condition you're shooting for. Picking a tech willy-nilly is not going to get you far in the game. The other thing I love about the tech web is how it reemphasizes the mood and narrative of our game. You aren't experiencing history, you're making it. You have to decide how to develop your people that will involve sacrifice, i.e. missing out on some techs. Beyond Earth is probably the most personalized Civ game our fans will play. You're not Napoleon conquering Earth. It's you and your ideals guiding mankind in new lands.
Yeah, Dennis, we are in fact remaking history when we play Civ.
Just saying.
We will be experiencing making history in the future. So, I don't know what you're talking about there, buddy.
Yeah, unless you're talking like landing ships before Napoleon was born, it was part of history. I don't know.
Yeah, no, but I think the big thing is it's not the same old static tech tree that you always use every single time and the same pass every single game and the same, you know, limitations every single game. Like, the tech tree has been basically the same style, some minor changes since, well, Civ 1.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, the change here is pretty obviously enormous because you are forced to commit down one path or another eventually. And because it's more of a central focus of the game, you're going to use it a lot more with your strategy. Just even a cursory glance suggests that, and this answer only confirms it. It doesn't sound like a simple change at all. It sounds like a pretty important gameplay change to me. But maybe if you're just playing the game casually, then it might seem less obvious at first, perhaps.
Yeah, and to add to that, and also translate for Imagine, who might have been too rational and Canadian in his explanation for some people, more ways to derp!
Woo! All right, derp!
Yes, I imagine it'll be quite a bit of derping initially with the tech tree, for sure.
We'll be like, derp, 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 derp.
What am I doing? Why can't I do this? Because you're supposed to be over there in the tech tree. But I want this. Too bad.
Well, I'm sure there'll be accounts of, I remember the time I accidentally relocated my palace instead of four. Well, I just had the equivalent in Beyond Earth, Ermagerd.
Maximum Ermagerd.
Now we have some quest decisions to make. In this case, we've just completed the quest, Gifts from Home. In Civilization games, the story is always created by the actions players take. These quests are there to provide some additional context with meaningful choices. Each quest decision results in a gain of some kind for your faction. Now we have another quest called For Your Eyes Only. We've just built a spy agency within our capital, and we're ready to send our covert agent into the field in the American Reclamation Corporation city of Central. Now our agent is on his way to Central, and once he arrives, he'll begin to generate intrigue in that city. As intrigue level rises, we can move from simple covert ops, like monitoring and smuggling, to more complex ones, like planting attractors to bring siege worms toward the city.
Last question. This one's by Vahuth 1978. Are the progenitor aliens contact victory, that's quite interestingly written, links to the XCOM or the Alpha Centauri universe? What more can you tell us about them either way?
The aliens that are part of the contact victory are not referenced to either XCOM or Alpha Centauri, but I think it's safe to say you can expect some winks and nods to both games elsewhere. We don't want to say too much about them because that falls into spoiler territory and the game isn't finished yet.
What? Coming out in October. It better be.
Better just be playtesting left, because it's crazy if it's not actually done.
I don't know if it ever really is finished. I mean, between DLC, maybe some inevitable patches, maybe some expansion packs. And then there's the case of when you play Civ, you can keep on playing the game really for as long as you want, even after so-called victory conditions.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah, the New Age model. Sell games that aren't finished yet, and then release the finishes in DLC, maybe.
Maybe.
Thank you, Dennis, for answering those questions, and also to Kevin Schultz at Thraxis Marketing for facilitating our getting these answers.
After we announced the game, it was really special to sit in that room
at PAX East with, you know, 700 of our biggest fans.
It was especially gratifying because we're Civ fans too. We grew up on those games. We love those games. And this game was really inspired by that. It's really our thank you to the fans who've been asking us to make this game for a long time and we've wanted to make for a long time.
Apparently, Firaxis decided to get twitchy. They just randomly decided to start playing Civ 5 on Twitch. Didn't really tell anybody. Did it.
Today we're going to show off Civilization 5. My name is Pete Murray. I'm joined today by Anton Stringer.
Hi, how's it going?
Speaking of random, within that...
What?
That they chose a scenario from the first expansion that's been out for like 2 years.
Yeah, so they played Empires of the Smoky Skies, which is probably one of the better multiplayer ones anyways. It's different, and it's relatively balanced between the different groups.
I think the reason that they actually chose Smoky Skies is in the end because of who the guest was.
Anton is a gameplay programmer and designer. He worked on Gods and Kings on this scenario we're going to show you today. He's also worked on Brave New World, and now, right now, Anton is one of the designers working on Beyond Earth. We were lucky he was able to take some time to work with us.
So I'm like, oh, okay, now it makes sense why you happen to be playing this. Part of Firaxis' new office, they have a recording studio.
We are in our new Firaxis broadcast studio. Hopefully we're going to be able to talk to you guys more in the coming weeks, months, and years over upcoming projects like Beyond Earth. That's going to be very, very cool. But today we're going to go back to a classic.
So there are more live streams coming. Back to something else I said before, more opportunities for derping. Yay!
Now you can watch Fraxians derp around playing scenarios and other such stuff.
Derping at their own game.
That was kind of cool. They went out and played it, and I didn't know about it until after the fact, and mostly because people kept trying to tell them to go watch me play first.
Like, oh, sorry, is this your kingdom? It'd be a shame if something bad were to happen to it, like me. Let's look at the diplomatic world right now. I haven't been the best neighbor in the universe.
You can say that again.
To be honest, they kind of brought it on themselves.
Yeah,
I mean, it's like most Civ games. I was minding my own business, and, you know, I may have done things like aggressively expand into this tile right here, which is very close to one of my opponents. And then this guy up here, he's just a jerk. So, you know, one of the things that I like best about this live stream studio is we have this really great glass panel behind us.
We do.
And you and I can't see what's going on behind us, which is really interesting.
Pete was making available the original save as well as the save point that they got to, kind of a challenge to the Civ community to see if they could do better from the outset and somehow scrounge up a win from the save that they ended at, which I thought that is an excellent way to engage people, kind of like the old, what was it, Game of the Month for the original Civ Rev, in a way that they would release, say, hey, here's a challenge, see how well you can do on the leaderboard.
There is potential for live streaming in now from Firaxis, rather than just Firaxis trying to get onto the 2K stream. Benefits of Firaxis have their own channel and doing their own thing. Wait, maybe they're going to get rid of 2K.
I believe there's more than just the Firaxis as an in-house developer at 2K. I think they have a few more.
Yeah.
That might want some airtime too. I don't know. It's just theory at this point.
Transitioning from Civ 5 to Civ 4, posted on Reddit here by Iden the Boss, and it reads, hey guys, I became highly addicted to Civ 5, all expansions besides scenarios, playing on difficulty 5, but become dissatisfied with its simplified gameplay compared to what I've heard about Civ 4. I often hear that it is much better than Civ 5 and was itching to give it a try. I bought Civ 4 with all the expansions over Steam sale, and I play with all expansions enabled. I've had trouble breaking the surface, however. I'm stuck with my Civ 5 ways in my head and need a few pointers in transitioning games. Any help is appreciated. Man, this is the answer to this is a bit long for the show, I would say. perhaps the most relevant major changes is that you really want as many cities as you can afford because they don't slow down your science rate. Well, they slow down the amount of money you can dedicate to your research, but as long as you can quote-unquote afford them, more cities is better than fewer. There are investments that pay off over time, and usually your first several pay off very quickly. So you have to balance your expansion rate against how many you can afford, but generally, once you're experienced with the game, you can expand as much as the game will let you with most starts pretty effectively. The other thing is, of course, there's no one unit per hex in Civ 4 at all. In fact, there aren't hexes, but the one unit limitation is more significant in that you'll want some counter units in your stack or to mine counter units, but ultimately very large bulk stacks with siege tends to rule the day until you get into late game nukes. So that's something to bear in mind as well. Other than that,
money.
Geez.
Money is important. Well, get lots of money.
Yeah, money management is really crucial early on, and probably one of the big differences between core gameplay is that Civ 4 is much more micromanagement intensive, much more. I mean, you still have individual citizen micromanagement in Civ 5, but you don't have as many cities, of course, by design. And there's just, like, you don't have the same degree of worker micromanagement in Civ 5 as 4. In fact, workers, I would say, are more paramount to Civ 4. And not that you don't need them in Civ 5, but your control of them has a much bigger impact on how effective you are in Civ 4.
And you can stack workers.
Yes, you can stack workers, too. It's just, you'll see stuff like moving one tile and starting a road and then canceling the road and then moving on to an improvement to start the improvement. Like, that kind of stuff becomes critical worker micromanagement in Civ 4 all the time. Constantly doing stuff like that in order to optimize your growth rate. I know I never really did that much in my videos because I didn't have the patience for it. But if you want to truly match what the top-tier D&D players do, you'll be doing stuff like that.
Are there still people doing Let's Plays or anything of Civ 4 that he could watch, you know, the person who asked the question? Because I would imagine you could learn quite a bit if they're live broadcasting stuff like Mad Gen does or something.
I haven't checked with the Civ 4 LP community. I mean, not just me, but lots of others, including some high-level players, have done Civ 4 BTS 3.19 LPs, though, and it wouldn't have changed since then. It's not like there's been a different patch.
Yeah, no, I think it's pretty static at this point.
If you really want to get into the nitty-gritty of high-level playing, actually a really good place is the Team Succession Games of the Month. If you go into one of those team threads and start looking at how they plan out their micromanagement, their opening, their strategies, you'll get as good of a guide there as anywhere in terms of how to approach the game. But you do at least have to understand the basics first because that's high-end stuff. But if you really want to see how the D&D class players plan their games, that's where you go because it's discussion between multiple good players on a team on how to do their openings. And it's definitely an enlightening experience.
It sounds like he's just looking for a brand new time sink for his life. I mean, if you're going to do that, you're going to go ahead and put in a lots of hours watching other things happen. I mean, that's how I learned to take my game a little higher than what it was. Going to these LPs, it was a lot more informative.
Before any of that, just play the game some and get used to the interface, get used to how all the mechanics function in their basic sense and enjoy it because that's the whole purpose.
Yeah, and get used to squares versus hexes.
That too.
I think a lot of all this discussion falls under the question of science. Whether you're playing Civ 4 or Civ 5, science is king. And if you understand where your science output is going to be coming from and the steps that you need to take it, then the rest is just going to fall in line after that.
Call in today. In North America, the number is 301-637-7659.
That's 301-637-POLY.
In Europe, 441-228-8-7659. That's 441-228-8-POLY.
The only thing worse than being talked about is not being talked about.
For more information on Polycast,
our sibling shows Modcast, Revcast, and Turncast,
or about Polycast in general,
log on to the series' official website at thepolycast.net.
There's always going to be somebody on a really old laptop or buy a laptop now and in 5-6 years when Civ 6 comes out or whenever it comes out, be like, why can't I use this?
Civ 4 and Civ 5 have already set the precedent that you need a relatively strong machine at release time in order to run it with any decency, so it's not like that would be out of the norm.
Yeah. I put them under the same category as the people whining that Windows XP support ended in the 8th of April.
Yeah.
Well,
That's a little bit more legit, as the number of viable alternatives since then has been relatively small, although Windows 7 is pretty good.
Well, I mean, basically, it's at a certain point, backwards compatibility stops being healthy for the game, because then the game gets super massive, and people wonder why there's not that many features, because they're spending more time trying to make it work than actually making the game fun, because that takes about the same amount of work, or more, actually.
Yeah.
Before they realize Polycast goes straight to your hips, we will end the show.
The BBC approves of this comment.
Because I'm sure in post-editing you're going to get rid of a lot of the fat.
He didn't say anything about fat.
Calling our podcast fat?
Well, maybe just a little water-weighted bloated.
This has been the 205th episode of Polycast. Make this a thing. Hashtag, how do you, Polly? Joined by Makalua. Apparently, Mackie is reduced to laughter. Okay, that's good. It's better than crying.
That is Mackie.
Hashtag, how do you make Dan shut up?
Hashtag, by not engaging in a response, the mean team.
Yeah, I'm just going to walk away now.
His plan, I approve.
You can walk away, but you cannot hide, sir. You cannot hide. And our guest, Hammer Rabbi.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
And a succession of screenshots. And also a succession of Mackie. Hey, Mackie.
Oh, I was trying to sneak in. How'd you know?
We can see you.
Yeah, you kind of appear in Skype when you join the call. Oh,
you're not supposed to be in Skype, though. You're supposed to be reading the webpage for what you're talking about.
What are you talking about this seeing in Skype?
Oh, I see her in Skype. I don't know about the rest of you. But, like, her icon appears when she joins the call.
Saw it, too. Yeah. On my secondary PC screen, I saw, whereas on my primary PC screen, I've got my show notes.
Oh, so Dan is a dual monitor cheater. I see.
Yeah.
Okay, you guys just ruined the whole joke. Seriously.
I just have a high awareness stat. That's why I noticed you.
So now that we've totally broken Civ Rev 2.
Again.
Well, it's going to be broken anyway, right?
Can we return it to sender and tell them to give it back, you know, when it goes out on console?
Something, your mom.
Whoa. Maybe that's
about,
because...
Speaking about your mom. We got questions and answers.
That actually was not supposed to be the transition, but okay.
Yes!
Yikes.
People are listening.
Yeah.
The internet is learning. It's becoming sentient. Oh, no.
Man, we just lost all the momentum here.
Yep.
Wait, I'm sorry. We had momentum?
We had a little momentum. Yeah, we weren't raised for this. We were going to bring it in and, oh, no.
But you see, in post-production, Phil, once it's post-produced, it will still happen.
Yeah. I know how this works.
We're just going to do this in opposite order, and you get to edit it and make yourself sound smart, okay?
Derpy.
Mackie can't see the glare through the internet, but I'll take a picture and she gets to know. I understand from the editor-in-chief, the editor-in-chief, ooh.
2K channel tends to get swamped with all the other garbage, so you don't get to see a lot of Firaxis.
Wait a minute, if it's all the other garbage, are you saying that Civ is part of that garbage? Matt Jin, seriously, what the hell?
No.
You said other garbage, I am exploiting your wordage for my nefarious benefit.
Boo.
An Ernst?
Yeah, I'm an Ernst.
Most of the Ernst.
Okay, so well, speaking about old stuff, Phil.
All right, well.
Phil, you're old!
The interesting.
There would be a totally different game if we made it at a different point in our company's career.
Alpha Centauri.
What?
Alpha Centauri.
Yes. That was in front of the answer.
I know.
So what you're saying, Hammer, it's like when someone asks you to clean up a space and you just move the mess to another space.
Yeah.
I cleaned up over there.
Yeah.
But it's an organized mess now.
Exactly.
So, do you think we can declare war on some people?
Yeah, we'll go to battle.
Let's start some shit. I mean, poop. Sorry. Oh, God.
It's okay.
I'm never going to be invited to a live stream again.
This is the first time for both of us, so...
First and last.
Yeah.
Dan, this taps are going down. Turn off of it.
Yeah.
Well done, Dan.
Broadcasting live from the gutters.
Record date July 5th, 2014. Civilization 4, 5, and Beyond Earth sound clips copyright Take-Two Interactive. Copyright Civilized Communication at civcom.net.